Coming to you from my apartment that doubles as a podcast recording studio. This is What Should I Do With My Life with Steph Horowitz. I'm Steph Horowitz. Thanks for joining me. This podcast is about how none of us know what we're doing. None of us have it figured out. No matter if you seem like you have it all together, you really don't, so be honest. We're going to talk about real stories from real people, their experiences, how they're figuring it out. From career pivots to being in the same industry for 40 years, we're gonna hash this thing out so we can all find more meaning and passion in our work and day-to-days. Today, we just dive right in. We go deep, we go there right away, and it's a very different and layered chat than any other I've had on this podcast. I'm very excited for you to meet the one-of-a-kind Pamela Wise. Pamela wears many, many, many hats. She is a senior talent agent. She's a personal branding expert, an acting coach, an educator, and she's an exquisitely sensitive mensch who loves to go dancing. Today, we talk all about our instincts, gut feelings, and intuition in the world of talent management as well as entrepreneurship, and just plain and simple as human beings. We talk about the Ted Lasso-ness of being a talent agent. We chat a lot about figurative stovetops and why you need to figure out what's boiling and simmering on yours. And we deep dive into personal branding and the importance in the consistency of being yourself when it comes to your personal brand and how to do that. You're going to hear us talking about this cool cat, Jonas, peppered throughout the conversation. That's how we know each other, through the Shape of Work program when Pamela was a visiting presenter. So shout out to Jonas Altman. I listened to this episode many, many times. Every time I extract something different and valuable that really resonates. So listen closely, eat it up like a nice bowl of chicken noodle soup. Here's Pamela Wise. Hello.
Hi, Steph.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
It's been a long time.
It's been a minute.
By the way, does anyone ever call you Pam or are we strictly Pamela?
I prefer Pamela. Loved ones call me Pam, right? Or people get familiar with me. And it's a term of endearment for them, but for me, it's a bit cringy.
All right. That's so good to know. And it's so good you say that. I wonder if you actually tell people that. Does anyone actually know you don't love that?
I've never mentioned the cringe element. You know,
this is breaking news.
It's just like, are we at that point? You can call me Pam. It's sweet. It's affectionate, but I do prefer Pamela.
If I keep this in now, people who know you who call you Pam are going to be like, oh shit, I should not be calling her that. If you could share in one sentence what you do, what would it be?
I'm a matchmaker. You know, I match human emotion to large-scale advertising campaigns.
And I work with actors. I work with people that are highly sensitive and highly creative and really trying to like put themselves out there. And I think that's the intersection between entrepreneurs and artists, is they have more to share with the world. And that's my sweet spot. That's why I can, you know, because I've taught acting and branding and marketing, right, at a university level. And I've also worked with like business groups, like people like Jonas, they're not actors. And how I can connect with you guys is I actually believe that entrepreneurs have the same spirit as artists, you know, as the artist's soul, their need to share and communicate. Like I work in advertising, right? Like I work with actors who do huge like national campaigns in the US. And there's been a real shift in casting, more over the 5-second rule. You know, in 5 seconds, you have to skip a video. Now it's all about who's the most sort of curious and interesting to us in less than 5 seconds. And I feel we make those same split decisions in business. We make a snap decision in under 5 seconds. Do we like them? Do we trust them? Do we relate? And even if you don't quite believe it, if, you know, stepping into that kind of like awareness and presenting in these kind of strongest traits, it creates consistency in your brand. So when someone meets you, oh, there are those markers again. I still have that feeling in my gut about this person. And that to me is, you know, the gut feeling, the intuition in a nutshell. That's the sweet spot for me. And I think for this podcast. So it's not so much what to do with my life is, you know, like, what am I feeling in my life and how can I connect that to opportunity?
It's what you just said, that within 5 seconds, you know the answer. So enough of the dilly-dallying and the overanalyzing, because you need to listen to your gut.
And especially in business, because business does come down to ultimately an end result, which is usually, you know, somebody's going to like book you or hire you or have the confidence to represent their ideology. Right. So that knowing more than ever, especially in the wild, wild west of crazy opportunities, and especially for women, we have to be very protective of our resources. Right. For a while there was this trend around sort of hypersensitivity, and it all ties into being an empath, you know, and this sort of thing. And, you know, sometimes my level of observation can be, you know, beyond sort of your typical surface. And so, yeah, we coined the term exquisitely sensitive. Sometimes we see our sensitivity as a curse, or that's the weak point in us as females, you know, or being empathic. Of course, we're empathic, you know, we feel, you know, there's obvious concerns to our circle or, you know, the greater, you know, force outside our circles. It doesn't affect me day to day, like that level of hypersensitivity. I have to really kind of like zone in though and make sure that I protect myself. Like post pandemic, I've become a big fan of almost being a little incognito. And now more than ever, I have to use my instincts that, you know, when I meet somebody, and by the way, I see everyone in my world as either, you know, a friend slash somebody that we could do some work eventually together with. And that's the entrepreneurial spirit. So yeah, I'm highly protective these days, but when I meet someone and I get that gut feeling, that trust, that familiarity, that likability, that warmth, you know, if you're not inspired in that way, like why do business with anyone? But when I get that alignment, then it's full on. I'm actually more vulnerable and more open than I've ever been in years gone by in, you know, in business with my heart, with my intuition, with taking chances, because I feel we're all that way post pandemic. You know, I feel we're all a little protective, perhaps jarred, you know what I mean? Like we've been shaken. Mm-hmm. So the natural tendency is to kind of go in and protect. So now more than ever, I put myself in kind of random situations. I say yes to crazy parties or bands or, you know, hanging out with people of all ages, only to get that flow happening again, where I can use my instincts as a human to connect with people I really like. And I really want to like share something with, whether it's a potential friendship or somehow there's an alignment in business. And it's amazing. And it's just all about planting those tiny little seeds. There's nothing, you know, we're never closing deals anymore. There's no sign on the dotted line. You're not in somebody's office and you're being backed into something. You know, we have a lot more like, you know, control over our business lives now. So, you know, more than ever, that kind of like lower gut instinct and vibe is kind of the key to like forging new business opportunities, because then someone's in a position to either connect you in some, like they want to help. The helping factor now more than ever is so huge, right? And maybe they can't help you personally, but they're going to connect you to a friend of a friend of a friend, right? So it's all about those seeds that trigger their feelings of how can I help this person? And not that you need help, like you're pathetic. Like, you know, at this point in my career, I'm like a senior agent. I'm well-regarded, but I've had to change my tune. I'm back to the energy I was in my 20s, connecting with people, going out randomly. Because if I really look back on where my best relationships or business connections come from, which is what I did over the pandemic, like what the hell was the last 20 years of my career? Because it was a whirlwind. It went from like starting off as a junior agent to having my own company, you know, and then I got into the, you know, the marriage and kids mode. And then I specialized in advertising. And during that time, like where it's like a business, like snakes and ladders, you can go along like the ladder. Do you guys have that game in Israel?
Chutes and ladders.
chutes and ladders. It's all about looking for the ladder up. And it doesn't have to be even up, just the ladder that's going to transition you to the next point in a relationship, in your business, and whatever it is you're trying to achieve. Being thoughtful, using your instincts, and being brave, go up the ladder. If nothing else, if nothing comes of it, at least it's going to give you different perspective, because you're on, you know, another level, kind of looking back going, okay, where did I come from? Where do I want to go?
Were you always so in tune with your head and your heart? I mean, you just gave me a very little timeline, a brief timeline of major life events in your career, as well as personal life, being a junior agent, starting your own company, and then transitioning to family, what that looks like. Now you're a senior agent. So just to take us a few steps back, when you made your first career decision, was it based on your heart and your intuition? And what was it?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if we really want to throw back, you know, my life hasn't been like a straightforward, I know in my heart. It's been a lot of response, to be honest, especially younger years, and for difficult situations where I'd get to a transition, you know, like back then there wasn't the internet. There wasn't, you know, we're talking in the 80s. There was no connection to anything woo-woo like we're talking about now. So for me back then, it was just energy. So my first career, I was actually a dental hygienist. Like I went to school to study. You know, part of being sensitive is you know when you're happy, but you really know when you're unhappy. So, you know, I was doing this day job, you know, which is great. My mom was proud, you know, I had more money than anyone else at my age, but I was so miserable. I wasn't in my spirit. And even worse, you know, someone can't even speak with a mouthful of gear.
Fluoride.
You know? Yeah. Fluoride trade. And at that point I was dating a fellow whose father was a theater director in Montreal. So in the day I was kind of like semi-miserable. And then at night, you know, we'd be out at these plays, you know, going to the green room, you know, like where all the artists are, you know, after the show or an after party, like in old Montreal in the cool loft. And my first connection to knowing what I needed to do was the energy I got in those environments and the level of curiosity and non-judgment. Like actors are the original kind of people that need to understand narrative, story, what motivates somebody. So I really liked kind of talking about plays with these actors where you're not talking about them per se, but you're talking about how they arrived at that emotion. I was so fascinated that somebody, you know, people were so connected and then could communicate and move you to tears in the audience. So yeah, at a very young age, I actually became in awe of actors. Like I still am in awe of them, even though I don't work with them on like grand scale projects, like big film and TV parts anymore. I work in advertising. Like some of us admire like people who do marathons, you know what I mean? And maybe it's a projection of something we wish we could do. You know, I always wanted to go into the business management side of things. I never felt I was the actor. In fact, I'm quite shy, truth be told, and measured in how I can put my energy out there. Like you might have a different version of Pam than if I met someone again and didn't like connect with them. Yeah, it was at that point at 22 where I'm like, whoa, this is where I need to be. I bought the one-way ticket and flew to the other side of Canada, quit my job. Family almost had an intervention at the airport. They're like, what is happening? And I came out here and the film industry was really like taking off, like X-Files, 21 Jump Street, you know, partying with Johnny Depp, like early days. I knew what I wanted. And then I just started studying everything to do with acting. Like I did like an assistant director course, a producer course. I studied acting. I'm like, I needed to understand the craft. And my first huge career break was working for a big casting director. I had, you know, found my dream job. And you asked earlier, how did I know? Well, I definitely know when it's not working. So sometimes it's not that things are working in life. It's recognizing when they're not working and making a really brave decision. So yeah, I stopped working for the big casting director. I'm like, no, I need to be closer to actors. actors. That's the relationship I want. Yeah, I started off as a junior agent. You know, I walked, they hired me and there was a bunch of binders on the floor and they're like, find them work, find them extra work. So I built my roster from the ground up. And a roster is a group of people that are my talent that are available for me to connect them to auditions and opportunities. So it's very Ted Lasso. There's a lot of, they have to believe in me. I have to believe in them. We both do a lot of work to move the ball along. As an agent, you know, it's not always glamorous. Sometimes, you know, I spend a good portion of my week talking people off the ledge of this role is not right for me, or, you know, I'm going to take a pass. And that's my instinct as a business person is like, you know what? I don't think this is the one to take a pass on. So, you know, I have to, that level of support is still there. Although people I work with now are a little more high caliber. There's not too much talking them off the ledge, but new talent, there's a lot of development. So it's a lot of like convincing and sharing how my belief and my commitment that they're going to book and they're going to get to set and they're going to have that ladder experience. They're going to go up the ladder and go, oh, that's what they wanted from me all along. Like when you start figuring out how to monetize yourself as a service, your very essence, just you sitting there in a state of like curiosity or trust or grace, like how do we capitalize on that? And in advertising, corporations are looking to actors to basically give them emotion and make them relatable to their viewers, to their potential customers. So it's kind of a wild circular connection there between artists and business. And I feel entrepreneurs fit in this category. It's very, very creative and visceral when it works.
We have to hold the phone, Pamela, because you just dropped so many bombs that I must go over with you. First of all, I love what you said. I mean, I don't love that you were doing this, but I love how you said it. I think a lot of people can relate how you were saying you were living your life in a way that was a lot of response to things. And I think it's so crazy that you knew what you wanted and you made a big, brave, drastic decision. Like you said, you quit the job, you went to the airport. Maybe there was a dramatic airport scene and that's really what happened, but you knew what you wanted. And honestly, you said you knew you didn't want to be an actor, but you knew you wanted to be in that world. And yes. How did you know that talent was that role? Why wouldn't it be being the director?
Well, from working in casting, right? So in early days back then, there was some very good talent agencies in Vancouver, but you needed a lot of experience. And I think I just kind of dabbled in everything, you know, like when I was studying, you know, I went to the Vancouver Film School and I was doing this assistant director course. And the teacher at the end came up to me and he's like, so Pamela, what do you want to do in the film industry? What do you want to do in the film industry? And me being sort of likable and, you know, a little wishy-washy, I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I could help here. I could do this. I could do that. He's like, let me tell you something right now. He's like, in the film industry, we're so busy. If you have someone in like a position to help you and they ask you what you're looking for, you have to be very specific. You have to be very specific and say it. And then, you know, in the 2-minute conversation, I'll let you know if I can help you. He's like, so what do you want to do? And I said, I want to work in casting. And he said, fine, I'll set you up, you know, with a meeting with like somebody who heads up like talent at the local union and go have a meeting with them. And so that's the latter situation. I was able to say specifically, and from that point, it kind of trained me to hold my intention and to be true to that. Right. So then I have the meeting with the, you know, at the union office and they're like, well, we don't have work, but we can refer you to this person. So I have a meeting with that person and they tell me about some like one casting director. And again, back then there was no internet. You know, if you didn't have someone's phone number, So I actually went and sat in on his workshop, even though I wasn't an actor. I paid and I learned a lot. But moreover, at the end of the workshop, true to that advice, I was able to close and just say, hey, this is who I am. This is what I want to do. Can we talk? And he said, sure, let's have a meeting on Monday. And that was my first real job. So, you know, it really is about kind of displaying your conviction and doing it in a way where you let that other person respond to you to go, I like them. I trust them. I think there's a connection here. Let's go. And the job turned out to be actually a bit of a hell job. He was a hell person to work for. I had my first experience with like chronic
stress. We all have them.
Yeah. Yeah. But in that, again, that transition of, it was so difficult. It really, and by then I'd made a lot of connections within the film industry. I was able to have different meetings before I landed on a, you know, a job.
It's knowing what you want and kind of always having it top of mind, like you said, your intention. And then when you're in situations or meeting with people or something comes up, this is top of mind, you know it, and you're not afraid to communicate. More than not being afraid, you have to communicate it. That's, you have to.
That's exactly right. You have to know what you want. And, you know, and there's different ways of doing that. You know, as a 22-year-old, I'm sure I was very earnest and sweet. And, you know, can you help me? You know, now it's a little bit different. I can hold court in a different way. I still have the same sweetness, but it's a bit of a more seasoned package, you know.
Oh, cinnamon. You said that you basically had your dream job at the age of 22. That is insane for a few reasons. That is very young. Knowing what a dream job could be and having it and acknowledging it. Since you've had your dream job in 22, your career has continued to thrive and flourish and grow. And I guess I'm wondering, what were you thinking at that moment? Like, if you're in this situation and you feel, wow, this is it. This is literally the dream and I'm doing it. Are you thinking about what's next? Are you thinking about where do we go from here? I'm curious what your mindset is like.
Wow. Yeah. Well, the dream job, it was a dream to others witnessing me in that job. It wasn't my dream. It was my
very important. Dream. Yes. Very important distinction there.
Yeah. So it was my first kind of experience knowing how performative we can be, even though I learned a practical skill. Like I learned in four-handed dentistry. I assisted the dentist. And also I learned, oral hygiene. And I had like the class of license I had, I could only do like, you know, the patients, like no one with like severe issues kind of thing. But, you know, unfortunately, when we go through different phases of life, especially education, right? So when I was in school, I was terrible at math, you know, chemistry, all that, like, I just couldn't wrap my brain around it. And I ended up going back to night school to get those, credits. And I had the teacher who could communicate to my brain, which was visual, the way he, you know, explained everything. And I got like 90s in math and chemistry. So, you know, I think of the dream job, but more of it was like a dream opportunity to prove to myself I was capable. Just no one had ever paid attention on how to teach to my type of brain. And I don't even think he knew per se, it was just luck. So it's those little moments of luck in our life, you know? So that guy, so I'm on the job, I'm sort of, it helped me to kind of like settle post high school to go, okay, now what? I am smarter than those stupid, you know, reports would tell you. And I got a lot out of the job in terms of feeling stability for a few years and making money. You know, I remember the day, I mean, beyond wanting to move out here, you know, sitting with the other ladies in the lunchroom and they were talking about recipes and, you know, they'd been working there for 30 years. And I just had a little foreshadowing, you know, a little moment of like, is this really what I want to be doing in 30 years? Like, is this how I wanted my life to look? So that kind of motivation, unfortunately, you know, it can come from also a negative space or a place of panic, but that's what catapults me. That's what gets me up the ladder and on, you know, to the next thing. And when I came to Vancouver, I'm missing a lot of parts. I had a restaurant job for the first five years I was here, bartending. There wasn't a lot of money as an assistant. Like, as a solo female, I had my own apartment. So yeah, I had an evening job at restaurants. So yeah, I was working two jobs. It was in the restaurant world that I realized, oh, you know, I really like the pace of newness, and I like the pace of being challenged of different situations and using my my social instincts, you know what I mean? Knowing how to read a person when you at the bar, like what do they need, what energy? So yeah, and in dental hygiene, it was performative. As a bartender, it was performative. You know, there's all these masks we put on to, you know, fit into different like subcultures. But even in doing the restaurant job, as good as the money was, there was a transition where I'm like, no, now I got to like reserve my energy for this business. You know, and when I made the switch, I think it was like 94 to 97, as an agent, I only work on commission. Mm-hmm. So if my talent aren't working, I'm not making any money. So that's kind of rewired my brain too. When you work, when you're like, I'm almost a gig worker, even though there's an arc of success, we're all working for that gig and to get a piece of it.
With your line of work, and I guess you could say for any kind of team, you know, my success is their success is my success. Right. You know, if you're working with other people, then there is this element of we're all in this together. I feel like there is something different with talent and being a talent agent. I feel like I just think of Joey on Friends, who's auditioning. I had someone on the show who said, my job is to audition. Like, that's my job. Failing and not getting parts is part of your job. Rejection is a huge part of the job. And for someone who, like we spoke about earlier, is exquisitely sensitive, and you're working a lot with people, and you're their cheerleader, you're many things for them, and you really believe in them, I feel like that would be so hard. And I'm thinking about people who are social workers or nurses or people who are really empathic and could possibly take on the feelings of those they're working with, or God forbid someone is, you know, a social worker working on a really hard case that someone went through, and that person needs to, at the end of the day, turn off your brain. This stays here. This isn't mine, and go with their lives. And on a different note, you are working with these people. You're super invested in them in many different ways, and their success is your success. And I'm just wondering how you've trained your brain or emotions when it doesn't work out and they take it really hard.
Well, I think that's all part of sort of the base layer of like warmth and respect you have. I recognize that they're doing a lot of work creating these self-tapes or going to these auditions, and it's a huge output for them, and they don't get paid for that. And I can relate. I know that dichotomy, you know, when I was working in restaurants and yet working in the film industry, but I couldn't sustain myself through it. I have a roster of about 150 people. I'd say 20% do this full time. They book all the time. And then there's others, you know, maybe due to their less in demand because of their age or their, you know, their archetype, you know, too character or too cute or who knows. So everyone kind of takes turns being in demand. So they kind of know that, you know, like I'm very practical with them. And I tell them that, you know, as an artist, you need to have four pots on the stove because you need a couple simmering, and then you need one coming to a boil. It's going to feed you. Yeah. It's that gig mentality, right? You're not just one thing. You know, and a lot of them are many things, you know, that maybe they have other ways in which they perform or they share. So, I mean, if you think about it, actors are taking on somebody else's script and telling it in a way that the person, and this is advertising for sure, tells it in a way that the viewer, you know, the person they're having that exchange with, believes them and is curious and wants to know more. We're kind of harnessing with actors that base level of trust and heart. And when it works well, you know, when they do these big campaigns or, you know, a spokesperson role or this or that, like, you know, in one day they can make 3 months' rent. And then a year later, that company wants to use the footage again, they pay them again. So that's right. Where it makes sense for actors. So my whole goal is to get them comfortable, to get them to a place of strong consideration and get them to set. So it is a lot of, I'm not like, you can do it, go, go, go. I'm just, you know, based on my knowledge of the industry and sort of how things play out or who is booking. Like I have the foresight because I have, you know, these actors, I know who's booking and I know what they're looking for, right? So when I meet somebody and I'm like, you'd be great in advertising, it's not just sort of an impulse. It's I see what's in demand. And if they can just suspend belief and go along with me for a bit, I've done that a lot from people like, you know, I've scouted people off the street or in a restaurant that are now in careers, the sort of the latest zeitgeist, you know, like the latest energy in advertising. I really pay attention to that. In fact, my tagline on my website is connecting advertising to human emotion. Advertising hires actors. They need to have this projection of we're ultra human like you. In a way, it's also a little insidious, you know what I mean? To take somebody as earnest as you and put you into like you represent a corporation, you know, but that is business these days. We're very emotional in our decisions. Look at Instagram. Look at these people, you know, that we connect with. We deem to be our friends or visionaries, or they're, you know, going to give us the shift in our brains. We need to do our business better. You know, more than ever, we're out there on this sort of wild, wild west of woo-woo.
Oh my God, the wild, wild west of woo-woo. We need a map. We need a map, Pamela. I love what you said before about the boilers, though. And I think it applies to so many things. I'm really thinking about the stovetop and the couple that are simmering and one that's ready to serve. And there's a lot we could do with that. You know, I feel like that could be applied to entrepreneurs, anyone. I feel like that should be applied to anyone. It doesn't matter what kind of work you're doing or in your life, whether it is passions or hobbies or something that's paying the bills, right? Having a few different things going on, especially today. And saying, but yeah. You're also a really good example of that stovetop, because you also have the intuitive branding. You also have the talent management and being a talent agent. You're also a coach, an acting coach. You're doing many, many things. And like we touched on before, not just with actors, but also with entrepreneurs and also with businesses. So you have your own stovetop going. So I would love to hear more about your stovetop. And if you can break it down a little, I guess, in terms of your day-to-day.
You know, I'm sort of inspired by the stovetop analogy because, you know, like I have a gas stove and some nicely seasoned cast iron pans, you know, and I keep my two cast iron pans on top of the stove to kind of like inspire me, you know, what do I want to make today? So
I love that.
But in terms of, you know, like the core of my business is being a talent agent. That's really like my 80%, let's say, you know, of my energy, of my focus. And these days it's all about these platforms, you know, like a springboard or, you know, a ladder up to the next thing. So I've been obsessed with actors branding now for like 6 years. From teaching, I kind of discovered like it's when you're doing emotional work with actors one-on-one, it can, you know, it can be very personal if you say you this or you that, you know. But when you talk in terms of archetypes or who they are within their actors range, what I've realized being an agent is it's not a mask they're putting on. It's when they play themselves best that it actually makes everyone's job easier. You know, someone who really knows themselves and knows their shtick, it just opens doors. So, you know, we don't want to turn people into characters, but that's really like where I found that that line of connection between someone's an actor's brand and how they do business in their brand. That came from me trying to understand and teach it, and also what people need to hear. Especially young people, when I teach at the university level, you know, they've just come out of high school and they've just finished university and they're still kind of like very young in many ways because they don't see themselves as professional and they don't see now how they can make a living. Like there's the concept of the art and then there's the commerce of the art. So yeah, my sweetest spot is I love people in when they're transitioning from one place to another. So like for an entrepreneur, it would be the transition from I have a great idea, I've created a product, now how do I sell it? And for an artist, you know, how am I viable commercially? How am I gonna make money? So yeah, you know, I think as, you know, as creatives and visionaries, we go through different like phases of obsessions. And mine has been branding and marketing for many years. On top of being an agent at all, it's just another pot on the stove. And I don't really seek the work either. You know, like people reach out to me, people in the business community, and they're, you know, they're fascinated that I'm a talent agent. What it comes down to is when I can actually have my moments of observation with that person. Like I remember I was hired to do this huge publicity marketing board thing here in Vancouver on, you know, the actor's brand and the, you know, and the, or branding, you know, creating your own brand. I called it Brand You. And I got up in front of this whole group of women and there was like 100 women in that room. And I started talking and I could see them all glazing over. I know my greatest gift and what people really want to know, they want the edit button off and they just want to have that human connection with you and what you think. So I did like a mini actor brand on every person in that room. I walked around the room and I stood right in front of them.
God.
At their table, they stood up. It was like round table, you know, like a luncheon. And I held their hand and I looked right in the eyes. And I just gave them, you know, like almost if they were interviewing to be one of my actors, what I found curious about them, how I would market them, something they absolutely have to highlight in their brand. They have to.
That's what you did with us.
That's exactly right. Like, you know, just share out, you know, and for me, that's, you know, like that's a download I get. That's an observation. And that gives me a lot of hope. People enjoy, of course, you know, hearing about, you know, what others think, especially if it's kind of close to who they are. But for me, that's what fills one of my pots on my stove, is that level of human connection gives me a lot of hope. And if one thing sticks with them, and, you know, I've talked to thousands of people and they'll come up to me years later and say, you know, there's one thing you said, or that thing, I never believed it before a stranger observed it too. So, you know, if anything, it's building up their, right? It's a validation. And unfortunately, we don't want to believe people, especially strangers, to make that one observation with them is something that can underpin their confidence.
Yes. And this is exactly what I was alluding to before, is that that's how we know each other. And that's how we connected because yes. of Jonas, because of the shape of work. And you did something similarly to my cohort over Zoom. You know, we were on Zoom, you looked at me, and then you said many, many things about me. And you also pertained it when it comes to the branding. You were like, if you're doing a photo shoot, 70s, big hair, lion, get the funky glasses, do the colors, bigger hair, more makeup. Don't be afraid to like embrace the quirky. That's what you said to me. And you did that similar workshop. And I know that I was looking at it before, I've looked back on it since. It's like, it's more than feeling seen and it's more than a validation. I don't really know how to describe what it is, but I guess just the fact that you're able to, like you said, maybe convey to someone something they might know, but never heard it out loud, let alone from a stranger, can give them that oomph. It could light that fire under their tush or do something where they believe in themselves, or they'll go for it because They trust you. You're an expert and you believe in them in this. There's a few things I must bring up based on what you said. First of all, when you were talking about the actor's branding, and if you know your shtick and if you know you, then tapping into that in your roles and in what you do. I'm listening to the Boy Meets World recap podcast, and it's actually the only rewatch podcast I listen to where the cast of a few cast members of Boy Meets World talk about what was. And today they were talking about how so many of them had so many similarities to their character. They were interviewing today someone who played the school bully. Now, this guy wasn't actually a bully in high school, but there were so many similarities in his real life. You know, the school bully is older than everyone, and he's this and he's that. And the real actor was held back in school and older than everyone and had this. It was just so interesting. They were literally saying we were so much like our characters, and they knew how to write us and we knew how to play them because there was like a degree of realness there. So interesting. And I feel in this more corporate-y, startup-y world I've been in, branding and personal branding, and just I feel like as a woman and as a professional, there is this emphasis on, also, by the way, Pamela, I keep wanting to call you Pam, but I'm stopping myself.
Sweet to me. It's totally sweet. But
okay, but no, but I'm not doing it. But it just, I love nicknaming people. Like, it's good I'm not calling you like P-Dog or something like that.
I want to expand a bit on the branding stuff that I do, because it's not just about sort of like shining a light or having them believe. Like, I don't want to suggest I'm some sort of like virtuous, you know, like you can do it, you know, it's not that. It's, I very much, you know, I mentioned before, I'm very visual, and my brain really thinks in terms of narrative and also decades. Like, I've lived through some of the coolest decades, 60s, 70s, you know, like, and knock on wood, you know, I'll live through some more cool decades. But I have a little bit of a thing where I have rose-colored glasses or hero worship. And so I can actually see somebody as the hero in their story, and a hero with flaws. It's not a superhero, but like what's ultimately relatable about them as the hero in their story. So the work I do with students, we always need to find the baseline hero. And a hero is somebody who we're rooting for, is somebody, you know, who usually has an objective, may or may not win. I don't know. Like, I don't really know the end of the story, but I can see the beginning of the story. That's my writer's brain. So yeah, there's the heart, the instinct, and then my writer's brain. And, you know, and that can also be my curse, because if everything aligns, you know, I can really see people in this light. You know, in some ways I have to be careful to not create something that isn't there.
Or, you know, like pigeonholing, I guess, right? Like, or, if you see someone a certain way.
Yeah. And, you know, the actors I've worked with over the years, especially, you know, like students in university, now through social media, I see them. I'm like, oh yeah, 5 years later, 10 years later, they'd have a whole other brand. The point of understanding your brand now is anchoring your essence and how people kind of perceive you with your sort of true principles, you know. And I like to work in sort of like terms of three, you know, so like your principles, you know, as long as you're always displaying enthusiasm, sincerity, and fun, like those are your three markers to me, your brand markers, or your brand voice. That's the important thing, I think, for humans, is to start with who you are and know your kind of pillars. That's your base. That's your foundation. It's not that you're becoming something different, but start with that. And that's your through line. So these actors I see 10 years later, I'm like, oh, that's still there. That's who, you know, that's their chutzpah. And we're born with that. That's our nature. That's our brand nature. It's not like a mask we put on. It's who we are. So that's the kind of stuff that fascinates me, like who somebody, their nature is. Because once you understand someone's nature, nothing is surprising to you. You know, like if you understand the nature of like the beaver and their need to like eat wood and create a dam. You know what a beaver is? Like one of those woodland animals in Canada?
I'm from Michigan. I know what a beaver is. Oh my otter. God. Come on.
But you know, with an animal like that, we don't, you know, we don't question why they're doing that because that's their nature. And that's actually one of my core tenets in life is try not to put too much emotion or expectation. But if you can connect with someone around their nature and you have sort of like similar like core values, that's the base for a relationship. So the more you can display yourself with that level of honesty. And also, you know, it's not like you have to be some earnest, kind, curious person all the time, but that's what we see when we experience you, Steph, you know what I mean? And that's your through line. That's always going to be there no matter what you're doing. That's the through line of Steph's nature.
I have talks about personal branding with friends, colleagues. This is a topic that's coming up all the time. It's coming up on the podcast. It's coming up in personal, professional conversations. It's always coming up. The personal branding should be the most authentic threads of you that you can put forward. I feel like personal branding has gotten this bad rap or a bad reputation or, oh, it's just showy and it's just people showing themselves in a certain light. So they'll be perceived a certain way or clients will trust them because X, Y, Z. And I think we can probably agree that real shit and authenticity is what sells. You tell me, you know, but like people are being more vulnerable. People are being more open. We shouldn't be afraid of personal branding. We need to learn how to do it right.
Yeah. And you also, you know, you have to, I think, you know, what I've learned from teaching acting, you know, or my observations over the years with people is sometimes we do create this kind of brand persona and it can be a little bit of a facade. Real estate agents always in the suits, always professional, right? And so that could be your real estate agent brand, but the personal brand is basically, we can't control how others interpret us. So that's why, you know, in a lot of branding work I've seen is ask people around you what they think of you. It's not just asking, it's believing. I kind of figured out A, my pillars, and then B, my voice, and then C, what is it that, like, what's my intention, you know? And on my social media, it's like to celebrate my talent's achievement. It's to share kind of like insight from other people in the community and just kind of like, and share out who I am, how I show up in the world. The connection in my brand is what you see online. If we were to meet for coffee, that's exactly who I am. It's enough of that alignment where it's consistent. And I've repped people for 20, 30 years in this business, right? Yeah. And it's the consistency of being yourself.
Yes.
Right. And yes. So, and being honest with people around where you're at, how they can help you. And it goes back to, down to that course. Like, you know, if someone asks you what you want to do, they're at that point when a human wants to help a human, know what you need from them. I mean, now when I put out casting calls, people know that I'm like kind, I give information, you know, trustworthy. And so now I have a lot of people who share my casting calls and like offer up their cousins, their neighbors, and people go and do these auditions, you know, and for me, I spin it like, you know, if nothing else, it makes for a fun story, but those connections are really powerful. And a lot of my work now comes from like dealing with perfect strangers, people I haven't even met through my social media searches, you know, and all of a sudden they're on a major campaign. And that's all the goodwill that I've created in my branding and my consistency of how I show up and who I am in real life. You're like a little safe space, you know, like your podcast, the people who listen to you, they come because they relate, they connect, you know, they feel you're insightful like that. That's the new business paradigm. And then ultimately have something that you need that is, you're not asking them, it's them being excited. And so by the time you do ask for something like do my workshop or hire me, or the base is established, you know, we should never be selling ever anymore. And you add a layer to their life or a pot to their stove that fits.
I love that.
You see the difference there? Like it's a different way of moving, but you know, I can tell you as a woman in her 50s who's consistently done this for decades, this is what works, because it's an expectation people have and they're excited to be involved with you. If you can get it to that level in your business, you know, where they know they're going to have an experience, not about money. It's about getting them to that point and then figuring out if there's something you could do business-wise together.
What advice would you give to someone who doesn't know what to do with their lives? We always wrap with this question.
I think it's to sort of scale back and get to kind of a core of almost like a baseline within yourself, where, like for me with my brain, I'm low dopamine. So like working with actors, for instance, going, you know, dancing or like going to plays, anything where there's like a creative element where people are like rising up and really like sharing their glory or their gift, that gets my dopamine up and it gives me hope. So I'm not naturally, I don't think, hopeful, I like optimistic kind of person in many ways. And that's just, but I know my baseline. And then I know how to layer in things that, you know, I get energy from. So I think for somebody is, you know, there's so much stimulation right now and so many options, but just get down to the essence of what really charges you up. What are you fascinated? What are you obsessed by? Right. And it's a type of brain. It's a neurodivergency, right? So like when I worked in the dentist office, it was so glaring. Everyone there was so like neurotypical. You do the job, everything's like steps one through da, da, da. And of course you have to, because you have to be like in a safe protocol. But then in the, you know, at a young age in the evenings, I'd be around artists and I'd be like, oh my gosh, they literally are speaking my language. I literally feel hope. I literally feel the dopamine squirting, you know what I mean? So for somebody who doesn't know what they want to do with their life, sort out what really gives you that hit of hope, that hit of energy, the hit of curiosity, and start with that, because that's probably like a culture that you could thrive in, and work backwards from that. What environment would give your life purpose, where you feel like, you know, not just is there a pot on the stove, but it's something, you know, the most delicious chicken soup.
Any kind of self-exploration, anyone who doesn't know what they're doing, without a question, I feel like you just must invest time and energy in the self-reflection and self-exploration. There's no other way. Like you said, last week I went to a wedding and I was like, I'm literally my best, most fun self when I'm on the dance floor with everyone, getting everyone riled up, getting everyone dancing. That's my favorite me. That's when I'm happiest. But you need to experience that to acknowledge that's one of those things for you. So you need to also be thinking about, you know, taking an inventory of what you enjoy. And I feel like you also need to experience and go out and do things to try and see what makes you feel that way, what makes you react that way. Where can people follow you, stay up to date with you, work with you, get involved?
Yeah. Well, my mothership is PamelaWise.com. So from there, you can see all my socials, et cetera, and Instagram. I enjoy that very much. So PamelaWise_talentagent. Other than that, you know, out in the world, by the way, I just wanted to say about your dancing, like, when I saw you dancing, that's the Stephanie that I saw when I met you. Like you, and I think you have a very like strong, fun inner child in you. And I looked at your dancing video. It gave me dopamine. I looked at it many times. Right. And I was like, I want to be on that dance floor because I'm that way too. Just give me the music, you know,
should they just pay us to dance, to party? Yeah. We could be the official wedding crashers.
I think so. I know. I think there's a business there.
All right, everybody. So much, just so much. Of course, this is a longer episode, but there were too many goodies that I couldn't spare from you or me. One of my favorite lessons from Pamela is if you have someone who can help you, be very specific and say what you want or what you want to do. Of course, this can take some time and clarity, but instead of being people pleasery and just taking whatever help you can get in whatever area you can get because it seems convenient, it's actually more difficult for that person to help you. Be more direct and specific. This is the best way for someone to really help you in what you want to do. I loved when Pamela said, part of being sensitive is you know when you're happy, but you really know when you're unhappy. This really resonates with me, and I'm just gonna leave it at that. Of course, I loved all of the figurative language we used today, thinking about the game Chutes and Ladders, to think about our personal and professional growth journeys, getting up the ladder to gain a new perspective. I love the stovetop, always having a couple pots simmering and one ready to boil to feed you, and hopefully it's the most nutritious, satisfying bowl. What a remarkable person. We have so much to learn from her. This was the tip of the iceberg. Please make sure to check out more from Pamela and get in touch at PamelaWise.com and follow Pamela on her Instagram, which is PamelaWise_talentagent. Links are in the show notes. Thank you.